Welcome to the best TV of 2023 countdown here on the Intercut Podcast. I'm your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, we're working on an HGTV pilot together called Flipanthropy. It's Arturo Zurita and Amanda the Jedi. Ooh. Amanda, thanks for joining us for yet another best of the year countdown. Are you ready?
I am ready. Thank you so much for having me, as always.
She saddled up. Look at her. She
I'm got saddled up.
Dripped down.
Back on the steed, back at it again to talk about the absolute best stuff that came out in 2023. It is a hard list to compile, maybe this year more so than most, but it's always exciting to talk about the movies and TV and more that just enraptured us, engrossed us, invigorated us. Yeah, it's the movies and TV and whatever that we just can't cut away from. So many things to talk about. And we're starting off with TV because I think it's interesting to talk about this year of TV particularly. We had a really excellent first half of the year list. I was surprised that it was like stronger than most years list just in those first 6 months. And then the strikes happened, the Hollywood work stoppages happened, and I think it slowed down a lot of TV in the latter half of the year. A lot of the networks were unable to even put out their new shows. The streamers had some more stuff saved up. But I'm wondering, Art, let's start with you. Did your list change much between our halfway list and this one? Did you add more shows to the roster?
No, I'm actually going to bow this one out if you could just play the midway one for me. It's pretty solidified from what it was earlier. Just some stuff with due time kind of went above the others. A lot of them, I thought about it. They could shift a little bit, but for the most part, I got most of the stuff that I had there with a couple that came in. But like you said, it did kind of get stinted. The Emmys was probably the biggest award show that got paused and moved all the way until the Globes, or the Globes, when the Globes is going to premiere. In January, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that got pushed back so much. From August. And I think that really affected a lot of the TV stuff. I felt like we were dealing with a lot of streaming networks and cable shows pulling the things that they never greenlit, like those pilots that they shot, and they're like, yeah, we're going to shelve this.
Oh, you thought you were getting a last season of the Abby Jacobson Amazon baseball show?
What was that one got canceled for sure.
They canceled that one too.
But there was a couple of like, sitcoms or like detective shows that came out of nowhere. And it's like, would these have been released if they didn't, have to pause a lot of their major stuff? But either way, I'm still really excited with what we had on the midway because they were going to stick regardless of it. Would have been really impressive to see what would have knocked it out.
A League of Their Own. I don't know why I was having trouble remembering the title.
It was a good show, man. Sucks they canceled.
It was. And there's a lot of shows that I think we were hoping to see continue or maybe just continue on a more regular schedule that ended up getting interrupted because of those stoppages. Amanda, are you also sticking to most of the stuff you had at your midway, or were you able to catch some new stuff towards the back half of the year?
Mine is like 50% different at this point.
That's good.
Ooh. Yeah.
I challenged myself to try and add a few more as well because I the beginning of the year was so strong, but there were a couple things I caught that I think are worth that second revisit, that extra mention as we get to the end of the year list. So we'll get to those lists in a little bit. But with TV particularly, it feels really hard to try and catch up with everything, be on top of everything. You know, we always can find an hour or two to sneak in a movie, but it's not always so easy to find 10 extra hours in your schedule to catch a whole season of TV. I'm curious if either of you have any shows in particular that you really wished you had time for but just didn't get around to. For me, my list, I love The Great over on Hulu, but that's a show that always just ends up, it feels like such a big undertaking, and I didn't get to season 3 yet. There's a couple hit things that were hits on Netflix that I was kind of curious to check out, the Night Agent, which is their most viewed from the first half of the year, and The Diplomat.
Not by us.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about it. I don't know what that is.
I didn't see either of them. Our Flag Means Death came back for season 2. I know a lot of people love that show.
It's a wrap, no? Or it's going to wrap?
I'm not sure, but I know it was season 2 was recently at least. So I still haven't seen season 1. I'm behind on that. Same with Reacher, which is a show on Amazon I know a lot of people enjoy. A Small Light, which I think Amanda caught earlier this year.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I was curious about it. Didn't get around to it, as well as Silo on Apple TV Plus, which I've heard some good things about, and Slow Horses Season 3 on Apple TV Plus. I've also heard pretty good things about. Did not see any of them, though. Amanda, is there any shows that you wished you had seen but didn't get around to?
Dead Ringers is one that, like, it's always there, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet. And then I keep seeing the lists, and I was like, I kept meaning to. I'll get to it. I'm so bummed I haven't yet. And then I did finally watch the other two. After
the other guys?
Yes. The other guys? The others? But I'm not done yet. I started watching with my mom. So she's like, oh, yeah, cool. Next time you're here, we'll have to keep watching it. Aww. So I can't just keep binging it. So
us recommending it to you.
Yeah.
You guys digging it?
Yeah, so far. I think I like it more than her, but like that makes sense. So she gets into that's things. Awesome. Yeah.
Because I know you guys had watched The Idol together, so that's really cute.
I know, it's so cute, yeah. Oh my god, I forgot The Idol! I think that's it.
Are any shows that you didn't get around to this year that you wish you had?
Yeah, 49, I have Wu-Tang and Snowfall are probably the two biggest ones that are just way too much to be able to catch up with. But the Wu-Tang American Saga, Snowfall, they've been on Hulu. People keep recommending that a lot, and I've heard they've been really good. Drops of God on Apple TV Plus? Anybody who watches that show has loved it, but that's like a full mix, subtitle, different languages. Mm. So it sounds like it's going to be really good. So I'm excited for that one. Blue Eye Samurai. I caught that one super late.
I've heard so many good things about this. Yeah.
There's no way this doesn't end up on a list, right? Lawman, Bass Reeves was a pretty good one that I started towards the end on Paramount Plus with David Oyelowo. I thought he's given a really good performance there. And then probably the last one that I saw a couple episodes of would be the Special Ops show, Lioness, Paramount Plus also, from the boy, what's his name?
Taylor Sheridan.
Sheridan, yeah.
Zoe Saldana, Nicole Kidman on that one.
Really good, really good. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get to finish that one yet, so.
Paramount Plus continues to be the king of prestige shows with extremely famous people that you've never heard of. But just a quick reminder before we dive into our best TV of the year lists that if you're enjoying this video on YouTube, like the video, leave us a comment, consider subscribing to our channel. And if you're listening, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, whatever podcatcher you use. Leave us those 5-star reviews. We really appreciate them. You can support this show for as little as $1 a month by becoming a member on patreon.com/intercutpod to help ensure we keep doing reviews, deep dives, movie brackets, film festival coverage. We got Sundance coming up, and of course, the best movies and TV of the year lists that people love. People love those lists. So we're going to keep it coming. Shout out to our awesome patrons for their continued support.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. It's time. The 10 best TV shows of 2023. Art, I'm going to throw it to you first. Let's kick off your list. What do you have at number 10?
I got a two for here.
All right.
Of actresses, it's Dead Ringers. There's two of them in there. It was in my midway of the year. I have to go with the Prime series, the miniseries that's been nominated galore for acting and for miniseries, and I think it's definitely worth it. It's supposed to be a remake, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yes, of the Cronenberg movie.
Cronenberg, yep.
And, dude, they flesh it out completely. I think that Rachel Weisz is fantastic in the role. She plays two very distinct sisters who kind of have different motives. They kind of have a similar goal, but just the way that they go about it, the way they interact with different people, the supporting cast that they have with it is something that I would highly recommend. They work at a not pregnancy, fertility clinic. Fertility clinic, and in doing so, they're getting like they're choosing whether they need to get a lot of funding from these really, you know, bigwigs, but at the same time, they may be pushing them to do things that are kind of unethical. They may already kind of be doing some unethical things. It's such a push and pull. I thought it was fantastic. I am rooting for her if she wins, even though I have some performances that I think are better. I would not mind it because she did a fantastic job playing both roles. Dead Ringers over on Prime is definitely worth the watch. Even if you save it for later, it's just something to definitely add to your watch list.
Yeah, something that might have made my long list. And it's got a really talented batch of people behind it. Sean Durkin, who has a movie out in theaters now with Ironclaw, directed a couple of these episodes. Karen Kusama also directed an episode. I think the Kusama? First one.
Catch.
Yeah. So Dead Ringers, definitely worth the catch.
Your talent.
A show that I feel like not a lot of people were talking about. A lot of shows kind of like die in the platform
they're
of Amazon,
so
just going to get buried out there. But
marketing. I think that's
unless it's the boys.
They're also bad at marketing things.
Yeah.
I thought Dead Ringers was Netflix, so that's how good they're
there
doing.
There you go.
You know?
Ooh, wow. They marketed it like a Netflix thing, yeah.
Exactly. So hopefully more people catch up with it now that it's showing up on some best of the year lists. Number 10 on arts list, Dead Ringers. Amanda, give us your number 10.
Okay, my number 10 is probably way higher on your list, I just assume. It's The Curse.
Yeah, we're going to talk about The Curse more later.
Yeah, I'm not quite done it yet, so I don't feel like I could put it higher, but it's also...
It needed to be on the list, right?
Yeah, it's so good, but it's also like such a hard
undeniable.
Watch. It's like, yeah, but it's good. It's so fun. Cool.
Yeah, we'll dive a little bit more into The Curse later for sure. I'll go with my number 10 next, which is Shrinking, the first season over on Apple TV Plus. An absolutely delightful show. I feel like we've covered it plenty on Intercut. I think the cast is all just incredibly charming. Jason Segel particularly does a really good job at navigating the serious but funny, but also serious but also kind of silly tone that the show rides. And, you know, it's hard to think of like a greater second fiddle on the show than Harrison Ford. Like, they got Harrison Ford to just be like a supporting actor on this show. I also think Jessica Williams is just such a light on the show too. It's a series that I just really like hanging out with, and I'm glad it's coming back for a second season because it's just delightful, but also heartfelt and heartwarming to spend time with these collection of characters, as many Bill Lawrence shows are. So I wanted to save a spot, number 10, for Shrinking on my list.
Nice.
Let's circle back to art for number 9.
I got a new one over here that could have been a movie if they wanted to, because they're taking these movies and they're making it a mini series. Might even continue, and I'd be down for it because I think it's the best take on the human characters in the Monsterverse. Monarch Ooh. Legacy of Monsters Ooh. Over on Apple TV Plus has been premiering on a weekly basis, and I think out of all of the services, HBO is scummy and they've bumped everyone down from the 4K. Netflix is like way too expensive for the 4K. Apple TV Plus might have the best picture quality when it comes to streaming. And boy, does it show for Monarch. There are some episodes here where I wish they were on the big screen because it's intercutting a lot of what's happened in the older movies from Godzilla, like characters that were in that 2014 movie when the attack happened in San Francisco. You've got characters that are coming back from Kong Skull Island and how they kind of got into the Monarch side of things from the last two Godzillas. I think it's supposed to be before the new Godzilla, but it also like kind of takes, I don't know, there's some time jumping stuff that they've been doing in the show, but I found it all fascinating. They don't skimp on the effects. But the characters, finally, you don't have these like, what's his name? Dave, Henry, what's Paperboy?
Oh, Brian Tyree Henry.
Brian Tyree Henry's podcast thing. Millie Bobby Brown going like, yes, there's a monster there, but my family's falling. I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
You finally have characters with some depth to it. And it's done some really great casting in having Papa, the father-son casting with.
You got both Kurt and Wyatt Russell in playing the same character in different eras.
Fun.
Beautiful. They're knocking that out of the park. It works phenomenally well. I highly recommend it. Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Very excited to see how they combine everything. They're doing the Marvel thing better than the Marvel thing.
Exactly, right? That's the thing with the Godzilla movies. The frequent complaint is that the human characters who take up the majority of the screen time are far less interesting than actually seeing Godzilla. And this gives the time and space to make those human characters more interesting in a way that maybe will hopefully positively impact the movies in the future. But for now, it's an interesting show. I think the time jumping that you alluded to did kind of lose me a little bit, but like it's so well produced and has that sense of scale, and the effects are really well incorporated that it's still very exciting.
They're not bringing it back for Kong Godzilla 2 though, but I'm excited. It looks so dumb.
Yeah. So Monarch Legacy of Monsters, Arturo's number 9. Let's go to Amanda for her number 9.
My number 9 is Heartstopper, which is the cute little Netflix series. And I just think we're losing so many of these like teen shows, and it's mostly because they're not good. They don't make good teen shows. This is a really, really good teen show. It handles like serious issues, but it can still have fun with itself. It's just like really delightful outside the way that real life situations have played out with some of these characters in very annoying ways. It's kind of weird how the show's events start paralleling what ends up happening in reality, because people just can't be fucking chill.
No, not on the chill internet.
But it's really nice. It's so cute. I'm so glad that it's already like confirmed for the third season. It's like, it's very, nice. Very nice. It's just nice. It's a good show. I like it.
Came out in the summer, right?
Yeah.
I was looking back. I had no idea there was a second season.
Yeah.
Again, they're so bad at marketing.
First, pretty high on your list too. It's maintained that level of quality, you think?
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back and rewatch this one because it was it kind of came out when I was really busy traveling and doing a bunch of other stuff, so I didn't get a chance to like give it the full attention. But yeah, I think it's very cute and good, and anybody who's into that kind of like teen kind of comedy or just teen stuff in general should give it a go. It's really nice. It's cute.
Gotta get into it. And the graphic novel, right?
Yeah, it's a great graphic novel.
Great. So Heartstopper makes Amanda's list at number 9. My number 9, I'm going to go with Only Murders in the Building season 3. Ooh. This has been a consistent entertainment for me, but I think in some ways they've upped their game even in season 3. Just the silliness and the antics that they get up to in this season. They're simultaneously investigating a murder and putting on a Broadway show that allows them to get pretty theatrical, and has Steve Martin performing different songs, which are really fun. Which of the Pickwick Triplets Did It is just like the earworm of the year for me. But yeah, I just think that both Martin Short and Steve Martin are so consistently fun and charming and silly on this show. Selena Gomez does well, also kind of matching their energy. And I think the real delight this season has been Meryl Streep showing up and just delivering some pathos. Like, not a bad get for season 3 of your TV show. So not just her, also Paul Rudd is fun on the most recent season. Paul Rudd is good. Yeah. It's just one of the like most delightful programs that I watch consistently, and it's a fun show to rewatch as well. So, Only Murders in the Building, season 3, I got that at number 9 on my list.
Where would you rank them? 1, 2, and 3?
I think probably the first season still tops for me, and I might have season 3 above season 2. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nice.
Definitely.
Sick.
All right, let's get back to your number 8, Art.
This is one where I look at it and I'm like, this is probably the show on the list that I want to rewatch immediately. How is it this low? Ooh. Poker Face over on Peacock.
That's so low.
I said.
I know. Still,
I know.
It's so low.
It's so low.
Yeah, it might be higher on other lists.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about it when y'all bring it up. Because, I'm sorry.
That's a good show.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
And thankfully they're making more of it. So we'll hopefully continue talking about it on these best of lists. Amanda, what's your number 8?
Gen V.
All right.
Which I just finished today. So I feel like, you know, it's really good. And I don't know where it falls entirely. I'm very interested to see where it goes. But it is the Boys spinoff show that I didn't realize that's what it was. When everyone was like, if you watch Gen V, I just assumed it was some kind of like weird vampire show. And I was like, I'll get to it if it's vampires. And then suddenly everyone was like, no, it's the Boys. And I was like, well, fuck, man. Like, I would have watched that way faster.
Start with that.
Boys. But No, I think it's like really fun. It kind of exists in this weird area that it feels a lot like those, but like the good version of like the CW shows and like the teen shows. But then it also goes so far into that side of the things that the boys do, where it is like you're seeing dicks, you're seeing balls, you're like over the like oftentimes unnecessary over the top areas, which is fun and it's funny, but it like it takes it away from being like intended for teenagers necessarily and pulls it up into a different area. I love it for that. I think it's hilarious. I just think that like some teenagers are going to be like, no, mom, it's fine. And then like mom's going to walk in on a dick exploding. But, yeah. You know, but no, I think it's really fun. I think it fleshes out the world in an interesting way. I'm always, yes. You know, I always agreed. Like seeing things that show like, okay, so we have like, we see behind the curtains and the boys and what everything's happening. It's fun to see the people who still have the curtains pulled in front of their eyes and all the different ways that they're being screwed over too, and how that's building into a bigger process. And I think they've set it up for a really interesting season two. At first I thought like, okay, wow, we're just done with these people forever. But then like, I like how they handled that, because it would have made just as much sense if it had that hard cut ending. Because it's the boys, but I think it's really good. If you're a fan of the boys, I think you'll really like it. A lot of really good new characters in there. And if you're missing those kind of like CW style teen shows, this is that, but like done really well.
They're trying to incorporate some of the storylines on Gen V into the boys and sort of have both shows reflect on each other. And they're maybe doing it a little bit more elegantly than we've seen some of the Marvel attempts at it.
Yeah. Or even Netflix. Netflix was going to try to do that with Shadow and Bone, but then they screwed up the second season of Shadow and Bone so badly that they've lost their opportunity.
Pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, so I
was excited for
that
spinoff for Shadow and Bone, too.
Yeah, because Six Feet
Under. That was the cool part.
They're the cool part. That's what they never realized, is that like the lore of Shadow and Bone is interesting. The characters of those stories are not that interesting. The crows are interesting. Just make that spinoff and it'll do well. This is unrelated. That did not make my top 10.
Yeah. I had Gen V around, it's in my top 15.
Okay,
so.
Cool.
Glad that you mentioned it. Definitely an honorable mention. Like Zach said, it's another one doing the Marvel thing better.
Yeah.
Because I like the perspective of it, that in the Marvel ones, you do need to see it. Or else you're going to go see Multiverse of Madness and they're repeating the entire story for you. Yep. You're sitting in Ms. Marvel's and they're giving you a Marvel Legends recap on Kamala and, was it Photon? Monica's character. Here, they go from this route. And this is why, I don't know if you've seen it, Zach, but I recommend it. Or anyone, even if you haven't started The Boys. The idea is that the characters there are seeing the boys' characters only from their perspective. You don't know anything outside of it. You don't need to see seasons 1, 2, and 3. And supposedly when they get to the boys, you wouldn't have had to have seen Gen V. They're going to be introduced to them the way they would be introduced in the boys. And I'm like, thank you.
That's what you need. That's all you need.
Yeah. It has the same meta-ness as the boys has had in the way that it's able to break the fourth wall to a degree, but it's true satire, in my opinion. Yeah. The way that they're able to play things so close to how stuff is happening in real life, the way that the boys have... and it's been fascinating because it's the same thing as the boys, but when I made the video, a lot of people were like, oh, this stuff is so woke. And they were like, there's this one bit dealing with A-Train at the beginning. And they were like, this shouldn't be done. I'm like, why are you PC culture? Like, are you canceling it? Wait, no. Let's just agree to disagree. So it has hit the spot exactly where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Great pick. Highly recommend it as well, Gen V.
Yeah, because it's funny. It has so many of these things that should appeal to the kind of, like, maybe right-wing or sensationalist kind of person. But then the messages that it's ultimately delivering are so much more progressive than I think it appears on its outside. So I feel like a lot of audiences are having a bit of whiplash when they watch it.
But it also, Homelander like, it fans doesn't, going through it.
Oh, the Homelander ones are going through it, but it also doesn't have a problem kind of going at both sides. Like, it's able to break down the faux progressiveness. The opening video in Gen V about, like, I'm super abled is crazy,
so
dude.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch the show and think that, like, it's not also taking jabs that way, don't be a snowflake. I don't know how else to put it. It's good. It's just as good as The Boys, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that also speaks to something that I think both The Boys and this show do really well, which is, like, they are very vulgar shows. They are shows that really go for those, like, jokes you shouldn't say or things you shouldn't talk about, but they don't do it just to just do it. They always do it to either inform you about the characters or have some kind of thematic connection going on. There's always a deeper reason for those things to be there. And good, like, I'm sympathetic to the idea that it's just too much and too overwhelmingly vulgar, perhaps, but it's not unmotivated or like artless vulgarity.
Yeah, I would
agree. The Game of Thrones of superheroes.
There you go.
The magic of Eric Kripke.
So Art's number eight. Actually, Amanda's number eight.
Yes.
Is Gen V. My number eight is going to be The Righteous Gemstones, season three.
Gotta catch up with that.
That was going to be my honorable one, but I knew you'd mention it.
Good, good. It's obviously Danny McBride is hilarious. He's done this over the course of several HBO shows now with Vice Principals and Eastbound and Down. But the thing that has really impressed me in Righteous Gemstones is I think his abilities as a storyteller, as a person who is constructing, you know, arcs across a season of television, has just hit a new level. The dramatic beats that they get with the various misadventures of the Gemstone Clan in this season are just so surprising and funny and revealing about their characters, and they are bringing ideas that they've sort of been hinting at for three whole seasons to the front in this season. And I think some shows, they kind of have their inspiration out front and then it's sort of diminishing returns as they go along. And Gemstones is not one of those shows. They keep finding deeper places to dig with the characters. They keep finding more interesting nuances of the whole world of these mega churches to explore and exploit and whatever. But I laugh incredibly hard at the show, but I'm also riveted and just curious to find out what's going to happen to all these characters. And I'm excited for them to continue it. Apparently, it's going to be back for season four. So, yeah, Righteous Gemstones. I think it's easy to overlook the show as just like a fun Danny McBride thing, but I think there's a lot more going on.
It gets me every time he says, Daddy.
But there's the more accents to it. Alone are hilarious.
The accents alone are crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see the special feature? The footage that they released? The behind the scenes?
Oh, I don't know if I did, actually.
Of that church that had the sled coming in?
Oh, that one I saw. Yeah, the Cole Christmas show. Unbelievable.
Bro, like,
It feels like parody, but it's so true in the worst ways.
Bro, do you know what we're talking about, Amanda? No. There is this mega church that went viral because they had like a whole Christmas show and they had Santa levitating from a sled. It wasn't even church. That was Cirque du Soleil.
Wow. Yeah.
It's more Cirque extravagant Sunday, than anything honestly. They showed on Wrench's Gemstones.
So it's they do that, crazy. And then at the end it's all like, but we need your tithing so that we can continue to spread the word
to pay for this, yeah.
Yeah.
Electricity built through the roof.
So my number eight, Righteous Gemstones season three. Art, let's go back to your number seven.
Beef.
That's moving down your list, I think.
One thing moved ahead of it.
Okay.
And the one that I had, after some time, I had to go with it.
Okay.
So I did I swapped what would it be, 5 and 6 spots with this. But I know one of you guys is going to mention it. So Beef.
All right.
No?
Yeah, I'm higher.
All right, okay. Cool. So,
oh, about the same.
Yeah.
Let's see what your number seven is then, Amanda.
My number seven is I Think You Should Leave.
Hey. Okay, hey. I'm glad you put this. I had it in my honorables.
Yeah, so... I don't know what else to say. It's like, he's just funny. It's just funny. Was
the zip line your favorite this year?
Yeah, zip line. And then the crooner is also very good.
The crooner, the smoking one?
Yeah, my roommate made a costume. It was really good for Halloween with like fake window.
That's
like everything. Yeah, it was really good.
We so can't go out without seeing like a vinyl on something. And we're going,
yeah, that's exactly it. He's like, we're like, what are you, Derek? And he's like,
Zach, what's your favorite?
Yeah,
the one where he's talking about it's the security company ad and the thing goes through the door. I forget even what it the sketch is called, but the Dharma 3000 or whatever it is. It's so funny.
55 burgers, 55 hot dogs.
That's a great one too. That's the best meme from this season.
I think it's his best sketch. It's top three for me.
That's so good. It's
so good.
The zip line just speaks to me because I would be that person. I'd be like, there's a zip line here. There's a zip line here.
Darmine Doggy like Door. That's the one that I like. Darmine Doggy Door.
Yeah.
Darmine
Doggy Door. Yeah, Jack Flashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big fan.
We could just like sit here for the next hour and talk about our favorite I Think You Should Leave jokes, but
isn't it great he's become meme status? Like, it's just go-to now for the general public. It's not even as niche.
I know, which is so good.
Yeah. I love it. It's
so fun. Netflix has to keep the show going forever just because of the social media power of his show.
Yes.
The hot dog went alone. Who did this?
We're all looking for who did this.
Oh.
All right, so I think you should leave. Amanda's number seven. My number seven is The Other Two, season three. I don't know if you have it a bit higher on your list, Arturo.
I think that's grown. That's aged beautifully.
I think it has too. We'll talk about that in a bit. Excited. Give us your number six then.
Mine? Oh, yeah. The Curse. That was one that had to supersede B for me.
That's fair. That's
and
fair.
I honestly do think it's going to go higher once I wrap the closing ones. But this is one of those where it's just like, I don't care how it ends. It has solidified outside of the show how good it is. Like, there is very few shows where just the press runs the junkets for it. Do it. I know Zach's going to have it a little bit higher, so we'll continue it. But yeah, cool. One that is definitely going to be on all of our lists. Clearing already. The Curse. One of the best.
Okay, we'll circle back to Amanda for her number six.
The Fall of the House of Usher.
Ooh.
Good one.
Yeah, I got into it with this show. I spent so long on that video and all the little... I even missed some stuff. He was good, though. I'm a big fan. Everybody's freaking out. I'm like, the final Mike Flanagan Netflix project. And I'm like, yeah, because he doesn't work for Netflix anymore. Amazon snatched him up. It's not that he's done forever. It's just that he's...
Just log into a different app.
Yeah, he's a loss now. It's cool, you know?
That's a loss. Consistency.
Consistency. And I really do think that House of Usher kind of probably brings things back around to a place where people were kind of excited to see him go. I feel like, you know, some people thought that, you know, Midnight Mass was too monologue-y. I know a lot of people didn't like Midnight Club for whatever reason. And this one does feel like it's kind of going more in the direction of like Hill House, which is what most people's favorite Flanagan is. I'm pretty partial to Bly Manor. I like them all. These are like my top three. So I had a lot of fun with this one. I do think that like some of the later stuff can get a little bit tedious while you're just waiting for like the kids to just more things to just keep happening with the characters. But the backstory being driven that whole time is so interesting to me and so riveting to watch how that unfolds as those later episodes happen that it like kept me with it the entire time. And I had to go through it quite a lot for that video and it held up. So big fan.
Nice.
You said top three. Is this your third favorite of the Mike Flanagan?
So it's Bly first, then Hill House, and then this.
Which isn't like faint praise because he's made some of the best horror miniseries around.
He has. And he watched the video and liked it. So it's approved by him and his wife.
Nice.
Hell yeah. She's great. I know you had a pretty strong reaction to, was it the end of episode two or three?
Yeah, two. There's a couple.
The rain?
The rain. Yeah. I was like, they're going there. It's the sound. It wasn't what you could see. It was what you could hear. And it was the commitment to the sound design of the melting flesh. I was like, they did it. They went
there. Prime gives them a leeway to go even crazier.
Well, he's doing the Gunslinger Tower, Dark Tower. That's the next. That's what they have him on tapped for right now. Unless that's changed, they had him tapped to do Dark Tower series. So that could be so much of his time. And it's kind of depressing. I think he'll do really well, but I'd rather see. I like him when he operates in the zone where he's taking classic works and building it into something new. I think that's making when he does the best.
Sure. Totally.
It's so good. So
people have been trying to get that Dark Tower series made forever, though.
Dude, that was stuff that you and I covered about how Tom Hardy was saying this is going to reinvent media. Like, it's not just going to be movies and TV. We're like, what could it be?
But I could see him actually doing it. Like, with Mike Flanagan, like, the backings there, I can see that, like, it's so interesting, though, because I feel like Stephen King only likes things that are bad. When people make movies about his stuff, he only likes the bad ones. When it comes to the horror-related stuff.
Yeah.
You think it's because that way his book stays the superior version of it?
I don't know. I think he has bad taste. I don't know, but that's fair.
All right, so the Fall of the House of Usher. Amanda's number six.
Yes.
My number six, I'm going with Full Circle on Max. All right, you have this on your list?
It got bumped off, bro. I have it in my top 16. Oh, tell her, Zach.
Tell me.
It is an incredible, twisty, turny, mystery kind of heist show that comes courtesy of Steven Soderbergh, one of the GOAT directors.
Oh, yeah. And, I know Soderbergh.
And also a collaborator with Ed Solomon, one of his frequent writer collaborators. Mm-hmm. It is just such an interesting show because it keeps kind of revealing new layers upon new layers. There are so many characters who are so disparate in terms of their backgrounds, their ideas, their motivations, and they find this way to somehow organically have them all cross paths or be indebted to each other or have histories with each other and in ways that are completely unpredictable. They don't feel like, of course it had to happen that way. It feels like, how did they think to have it happen that way? And when you get into a show that is as mysterious as this one, you want to be left guessing, to not get ahead of it. But it's also just a show that feels really lived in. One of the key moments of tension revolves around a guy trying to meet somebody to deliver a ransom and their phone dying. And it's just one of those details.
The park.
Washington Square Park in New York, yeah.
Like just crazy setting to have it in, too.
Exactly. And it just feels so, like, personal and detailed and lived in a way that I think sometimes you can feel removed from those shows. I don't know. There are just so many interesting choices they made. So many great performances too. Timothy Oliphant, CCH Pounder, Claire Danes. I really, really dug this show. We're going to do our underrated movies, hidden gem movies. This is like the hidden gem TV show of the year for me. Cause I don't, nice. I feel like I haven't seen almost anybody talking about it, but it is so rewarding. Yeah. It's a full circle. Definitely check it out over on Max.
Yeah. Claire Danes, I think, was a standout. I knew from the moment that she was on screen, I'm like, oh, you're going to cook this. You don't get the, how many Emmys under her belt from Homeland?
Yeah.
Like three. I heard it's a book as well. And I heard the book goes even crazier. So I'm excited to read it because, yeah, it's very twisty-turny.
I'm give excited. It a watch.
Pick that up for the holidays.
I did at 15.
Oh.
There we go. So on the long list, we are halfway through our best TV of the year lists. Let's go back to Art for his number five.
I had Beef above this. After a little bit of time, I have to go with it. I think it has been underappreciated. Swarm on Prime is the American Psycho for the modern age that people have not been paying attention to. It follows Dominique Fishback in what I consider the best performance on TV, personally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Especially
she's
when
excellent.
It comes to an actress.
I still got
to
catch up with it.
Literally killed it. I think it is beautifully shot. It was one that we saw the screeners for in the moment that I jumped on for like the actual Prime streaming. Whoa.
Yeah.
It is beautifully shot. In the most disgusting way. It has some of the best cameos, guest performances, whatever we want to call them. Surprised that for some of those guest performances, those weren't nominations.
Yeah. I'm not so sure that I would personally count them as Billy got a supporting role. It kind of felt
but
more,
it would still,
more like a guest
but it would still
role
for
to
an
me,
episode,
but
be a guest role.
Yeah.
And nothing there. There is some incredible twists and turns that happen here. Some memes that have stuck for a while. Some GIFs, I should say, that have stuck for a while. But it is pretty much like a satirical take, if you want to call it that, of fan culture, specifically
Stan culture,
the bees,
a beehive, we'll call it. Crazy stuff, and then the twist that they give you towards the latter half of the meta-ness of the show.
Do the
is very
come
Fargo-like. It's just a very interesting way of telling the story. If they were to make a Swarm season two, I would love for it to be a Swifty take. I would love for it to be a Swifty take.
That'd be really cool.
I can't recommend it enough. Good performances all around. And I think this is going to be one where years down the line, people are going to look back at it and be like, this didn't get as much love as it deserved. Swarm. Yeah.
There's
Swarm
just,
all
I feel
way.
Like the streamers are so bad at promoting their shows now.
Especially Prime.
They'll
do
sucks.
A whole South by pop-up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then nothing.
And then nothing.
And it's like, I kind of forgot about it. I haven't gone back to finish it. Not because I thought it was bad, but it's just like,
there's a lot of stuff.
They're not pushing it.
There's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I had Swarm on my honorable mentions around 15 as well. But incredible show. I think there are some episodes that worked better for me than others, but the episodes that really worked for me are like some of the best episodes of TV this year. Like episode 6, particularly, which you're talking about, is one of the funniest things I've seen all year.
All right. I'm going to get on
it's
it.
Really good. Also, a lot of supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
I see them, like, they'll be in different movies. I was like, oh, that's a standout actress. Let me go. You were in the third episode of Swarm?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's been really cool to see that also. It's like, damn, okay, they really collected it. Also, not to mention, this has an episode directed or written by Obama's kid?
Yeah. Oh. Malia, yeah. I think, wrote one of the episodes, Malia? Right?
Yeah. And it's not bad. I've seen her short that is going to be at Sundance. Not the best short. But her working here with Gambino has been a lot better. I think Glover knew exactly what he was doing there. Nice. And nah, bro, this is a good show.
Awesome.
It's a good show.
Swarm, Art's number 5. Let's go to Amanda for her number 5.
Reservation Dogs.
Thank you for putting this on there. I have this is another one that I didn't get around to that last season, but it's such a good show.
It is a really good show. So I don't know if this was on my list last year because I think I was late to season 2, but I did make sure to get this under the belt for this one because I think it's the final season. And they really went all out with it. Like, they took a lot of chances. Nice. They did some really interesting things where they were telling stories from, like, people in the past and how that connected to the people in the present and different issues with, like, culture. So for those who don't know, like, Reservation Dogs, it's about a bunch of kids who grew up on a reservation and just, like,
just getting by.
Just getting by and then, like, kind of going on these different journeys to, like, honor friends and do things that, like, a friend that passed away couldn't do. And then just kind of how, you know, what life brings. What can you expect from life? What are the things that are expected of you when you're born into these communities that are such communities? Can you leave? Is it a problem if you don't leave? Is it okay to want to leave? And all the just different things like that. And they really knocked it out of the park with this one. I think they took some really cool chances. They kind of incorporated a lot of interesting, like, lore and myths and just different things from you know, Aboriginal and Native culture that were, like, very interesting, very kind of, like, scary, very like, prescient of the times and stuff. So I think they just really knocked it out of the park. There's, like, so much care put into this show. Yeah. and I don't think the kid, like, the actors in the show get enough attention for how really good they are. Yeah. And how, like, very defined they are with their personalities, their characteristics, their just, like, these little throwaway words that they'll say that you've never heard anywhere else, but this whole community will just use these words and know exactly what they mean. And I it's just so charming and has so much personality and isn't trying to be anything other than what it is. And, like, it's what it is very special. I think it's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that you spotlit the cast. I feel like it's one of those casts that we're going to see them pop up in a bunch of places in the future and look back on this show and just be amazed that this was kind of like a launching point for so many of them. Devery Jacobs, we've already seen her do incredible work in Backspot, which was at Toronto earlier this year.
My watch list.
I think Paulina Alexis is, like, so peculiar and interesting on the show.
Her.
I love her performance.
She's who I'm thinking of when I'm, like, the ways, the different ways people talk and just, like, this. It's, so quirky and fun.
And then
also the two guys who are always just, like, commentating around the town.
Exactly, also, Zahn McClammon, I want to give a quick shout out to because he shows up in a lot of different Native focused shows or movies and whatever, but he's so interesting and funny and just has, like, a really unique character here. You can point to so many people who are involved in this show. And I think it's just, like, a really another one of those hidden gem shows that not enough people are talking about, but it has some episodes that will really stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Stopping it at 3 is horrendous.
Yeah,
like, not being able to allow it to go further to, like, get that full syndication.
Yeah,
I think they
ugly.
I think they chose to.
Yeah, I think Sterling Harjo really chose.
I think
to,
he wanted but... to. Yeah, I think he felt like they told the story where they wanted to tell it up to. But there was, like, a lot of different ways they could have gone. I think it's when it got to the prospect of splitting the cast off. They didn't want to pull the Degrassi. They didn't want to try to, like, split things up between locations. So I get it. It does suck, but I think it's better to do that than let it kind of, like, fizzle.
Totally.
I feel like a lot of Taika shows, because you were talking about the pirate one, he's choosing to end that at 3 as well. So it's like, I feel like the max has been 3, other than What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah. I think that one's gone farther.
It has.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think
went,
I had
that
the first.
Network.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right? Yeah.
That's
why. I had the first season on one of the lists prior, so I can't wait to catch up on that one because that's the one I've let slip by. But every time something plays on Hulu, if it's the Wonder Years, I turn it off from the autoplay. But that one, I'll let the first episodes play.
Yeah,
it's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a whole season of What We Do in the Shadows that came out this year that I skipped. That probably would have had a spot on my
list. I missed it.
I saw a gif from it, from one of the vampire guys, and it was really funny, dude.
I'm so excited. I don't know how I missed that one.
Yeah, let's give that an honorable mention, even though we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, an honorable mention. Yeah.
All right.
For consistency.
Amanda's number five, Reservation Dogs, season 3 over on Hulu. My number five is going to be Poker Face, season 1, but Amanda hasn't said hers yet, so I think we can circle back to Art's number 4.
The Last of Us.
Oh, shit.
Okay, get into the heavy hitters.
This was the one that I was just like, how far is this going to drop? And it was more so the discussions around it. Mm-hmm. And I got just tired of Pedro being in everything, I'm not going to lie. But like, that is a side to going, you know, going back to those early episodes and it just delivering. Mm-hmm. I do think the finale isn't as strong as it could have been as someone who like was also playing the game again as the series was out. But like, it wasn't bad. And especially a lot of the guest performances that they had on there, they really delivered in building this world. I wish they did have more zombies. I wish they did have more of those fights. But obviously, it was supposed to be a lot of the internal human conflict that they had in there. Yeah. But, I mean, I go back to the standalone episode that they had with the guy from White Lotus and...
Nick Offerman and Marie Bartlett, episode 3.
Yeah.
Perfect standalone thing.
Yeah.
I think of the sequences with our main character and when she has to, like... realize what it is to become an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The episode with the brothers.
Oof. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Like when you start having sequences that are better than how they delivered them in the game, I'm like, all right, there's a lot to give credit to here. I couldn't bump it any lower than what it was. The Last of Us, I think, really delivered on it. And they got a real big feat coming up.
They do.
With season 2. And if they those casting rumors are correct.
I don't agree with them.
Really?
I love Caitlin Dever, but she's not Abby at all. True. She's older Ellie. She's not Abby. She don't got Abby in her.
Or she got bulky.
I don't think she can.
I saw her fight those aliens.
I don't think she can. It's so like, I actually used to do a lot of powerlifting and my mom was always like, you're going to get so jacked. And I was like, no, my body type will not support that. Mm-hmm. My legs will get thicker because my legs just, that's where any weight goes to my legs and my hips. My upper body is always going to stay like this. I don't think without steroids, Caitlin Dever is not getting.
So she's going to
have to
get on the Marvel plan.
But I don't even then, I don't think it is like, it's harder to get a woman there than. Yeah, and I don't think she'd do it because like that would destroy her body. But
Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding.
You want her?
Probably. Okay. That's like I don't think I love Caitlin Dever, but I also like playing that game. I don't think I think she could play the part. I just don't think she is the part.
Yeah,
she could have the SpongeBob arms.
I don't know. When people were saying Florence Pugh, that made more sense to me.
Because we've seen her fight, though.
We've seen her fight, she looks the part more. I think she's got, I don't know. She just feels more that part to me. I don't think Caitlin Dever is remotely the right call, but I could be wrong. She doesn't scream it for me.
You're not wrong. We all like Caitlin Dever as an actress, but it's...
Performance-wise,
It's about...
Abby does have that presence, that stature.
Yeah, get somebody who has that stature already. Like, you're literally now just cannon-foddering people to be like, see, a woman can't naturally be that physique. And it's like, if you spend all your time training and your physique is kind of naturally geared towards getting that way, like, I know people who could get the Abby physique without doing steroids. So, like, get somebody who does that, like, you know, in my opinion.
Do y'all have this on your list?
It's in my, it, like, just got bopped out.
Oh, I'm pretty surprised you didn't have a top 10, Amanda.
I know. I think it's because, like, the more I really love it, but the more I think about it, it does just feel like a Cliff Notes television show. I feel like I wanted more. Like, I feel like they sped run the too much.
Yeah, like,
I know, that's what I mean. So, like, it has so many good sequences and moments and things, but then there's so much more I wanted in it that isn't there.
Yeah.
And the television show is the time to do that.
Yeah.
The game...
Yeah. That was the battle I had with it. I agree with you. Like, I can't deny that, but at the same time, it's like, am I being harsh because I know how great the game is? I kind of toss it up, but that is completely fair.
Yeah, and it's like,
so it's still very good, and it could have happily been on this list.
Yeah, it's hard to like knock it too much because it is so well executed, and I can imagine particularly for someone
for what it is,
who isn't familiar with the games, finding it to be really incredible. But
see, That's where I found most people having an issue, being like, I felt like it didn't have enough this. I felt like there was something missing. I felt like there was this. And it was those were the people who had not played the game. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's people who have played the game are being kinder to it than people who haven't.
Yeah. And perhaps there's some of that too. But I got the same feeling like Amanda that like ultimately this is like a version of a story that I've already spent a lot of time in. And, you know, I think it's not surprising that the strongest reaction people had was to that third episode, which feels like the biggest departure from the games. I'm hopeful, especially given what we know about where the story is going to go and what HBO might want for this show, that they did a really great job of establishing the world and the characters in season one, and they can use season two as a bit of a branching off, expanding, widening point so that we're not so tethered to the story as we've already heard it. But it's still a great show, and it made my honorable mentions.
It's still great. It's still great.
Put it on? Yeah, you're the only one.
No, you're the only one.
You're the sucker.
It is really good. It is really, I'm really, really good. You're the last of us. But yeah, it's just one of those things I've spent. There's so much of it that I love, but then it's what it's lacking that keeps coming back to mind more so than what it has. But maybe that'll change if I watch through it again. I hadn't watched through it again.
Here's to season two.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right, Art's number four, The Last of Us. Amanda, what do you have at your number four?
I think this is where I'm going to stick the beef.
Ooh.
Or just beef.
Okay. Oh. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on your list.
I don't have it. It's in my honorable mentions.
Okay. I don't know. I just really liked it. I love how it kind of just like these two people just kind of started swarming out of control with one another, and just how big it got just from this simple premise and how like dedicated they were to trying to like absolutely destroy each other's lives, like quite literally, and how much of like a loser they made Steven Yeun. Like it was like impressive. Like
so good.
It was
that
so
church
good.
Scene.
Yes, like just wild, wild stuff. That's like so uncomfortable to watch, and like you know somebody's just like digging themselves like a bigger hole, but it's so entertaining. And it was just like, it was one of those like I was hooked. Like once I started watching it, I wasn't stopping until I was done the show.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I hate all the baggage that they came with the show, and they should have handled that better, because I think it delivers it in the best way. You know, all this aggression. I know Zach didn't like the episode towards the end where they're kind of like by themselves. It is like a very,
you know what, I liked that episode. I didn't like the one before it that got kind of like very violent.
Too crazy?
Too crazy for me, yeah.
Oh, okay, then we kind of agree then, yeah. Because I actually think the way that they hype it up so much and then kind of let it mellow out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bold.
Nah, bro, like it ages so well.
Yeah.
Ali Wong has been picking up a lot of the awards. And I said Dominique Fishback is my preferred pick. Mm-hmm. But I can't get mad at it. She killed it in it. I still would argue that Steven Yeun is the better of the performances in here, and I wish he was getting more love because he absolutely
killed it. Yeah, it's weird. I didn't know
he
wasn't.
He gets like the noms, but he's not getting the wins. Oh. And I thought he had a lot of moments that were just.
Me too. I think he had a much harder job.
The Burger King bit?
I think he had a harder job of it.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
He's so good.
I think he had he had a more difficult task at hand to be like, you're just going to be a loser, man. Like, you're going to be terrible. And he's like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, no. Beef is fantastic.
Yeah.
The series creator, Lee Sung-jin, has talked about that he has a 3-season arc in mind. But would you like them to leave well enough alone? Do you want it to be a limited series? Or would you like to see it like an anthology version of Beef more than that? Or if he's got more ideas, you want to go back to these characters?
I think it's done.
I think it's done.
You put it on Letterboxd as a miniseries?
Yeah, that means it's done.
It's good.
You chose your path. You chose your path. It's there.
Are you saying anthology, though?
I could probably handle anthology.
You'd prefer the anthology version?
I don't I don't love it. And I think that kills a lot of shows. But I think this is a show that can handle it.
Yeah.
Netflix's Fargo?
There you go.
Not even that. But yeah, that's like they could do that. Yeah. Because
it's all about how they handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like Cruel Summer tried to do that and that killed that show.
Bro, and then you can say it was like a season two. I'm like, am I dumb? This came out already.
Yeah, no.
And it turned out it was like a whole new season
and
again.
And I hated that. I was like, what? They left the last one off at such a good, interesting point keep going. What is wrong with you? But yeah, I hated it. Yeah, I could handle an anthology for Beef.
Nice. All right, so Amanda's number four is Beef. Beef? I'm putting a TH at the end of that. Beef. My number four pick is going to be How To with John Wilson, the third and final season, an incredibly special, idiosyncratic show from the mind of John Wilson as he documents his life navigating New York and assembles his strange advice on top of the funniest, randomest B-roll footage imaginable. It is a really interesting show. I think it sort of interrogates the form of documentary in a unique way, that it is both like highlighting artifice and also like acknowledge and stripping it down to its most bare essentials too. I know Art and I disagree about some of the final episodes of the season, but I think there's some of the most incredible work he's done and the most thought-provoking ideas he's put out there. But I think the thing that I most am going to miss about this show not continuing on is just his curiosity about people. I think that How To with John Wilson highlighted some of the most like unique and outsider perspectives that we got on TV. You got to spend extended time with all of these people who exist on the fringes of society and aren't normally given the spotlight. And here, they're not only given the spotlight, they're often treated with like so much more empathy than you'd expect. Just they really want you to feel for these people, even as eccentric and strange as some of them might be. So I'm just regularly awed by the work he puts into that show. And I only hope that he can continue that energy in another format, even if it isn't this one, because I think John Wilson's a really, really special filmmaker.
He is. It's like Borat, but he's not like making fun of the subjects. He finds so many empathetic moments.
I like that.
With them. I had it as my number 12. This season has what is possibly my favorite episode of the series. And I keep tossing it because I saw them back to back. How To Work Out. And How To Watch the Game. So good. Incredible episodes. Probably some of my favorites of the series. And then, as X said, I think it has one of the worst episodes of the series, because I think the whole series is about the honesty and the truth that he gets from people. And when he admits that he lied about some things, I think that's just him admitting that he lied about some things.
To me, it's an interesting, like, look at the form of documentary and what
it was never about the form of documentary.
All
your favorite moments of the show are the honest parts. You just mentioned all the people that he meets, all the truth.
One favorite thing in the show.
Name another part in the documentary where he lies that was the form.
It's not about like another part where he lies, but it's about the construction of it. And I think the construction of it is very intentionally different than a lot of other documentary formats, and he's sort of like highlighting the ways in which it is sort of in the spirit of other documentaries. I think there's something very smart in there, but the construction I understand,
is how he finds truth.
I mean, he's finding a different truth. He's finding the truth of documentary filmmaking in that episode. I don't know. I understand why you didn't like the rug pull of it, but I think it's really brilliant. I think it's really smart.
Got caught with plagiarism and said, "My bad, guys." But isn't it crazy how things change in documentaries? Look, I will still stand.
We should let Amanda catch up and she can be the deciding vote.
I'll do it.
Have you caught any of it?
No.
Is still like this is the series is fantastic. It is great. 1 and 2 made both of my lists for the first two seasons.
Okay.
This one's right there. It's at 12, literally at 12. And I was almost going to push one of the other ones off.
Only John Wilson's mind could work in a way where he's talking about his sexual experiences and setting it to a montage of him putting out his hand for dispenses of hand sanitizer foam just shooting out into his hands. It's really
only
funny.
Only John Wilson can go to a vacuum convention and almost get me to cry when he interviews that one dude in his vacuum collection room.
Yeah.
Bruh. Yeah, it's those little moments that he finds with people that are there. It's incredible. And I agree. Whatever he does next, I hope they give him the leeway to make it be whatever he wants.
This is one of those shows that I really love, but I love in a way where I'm like, this should be given a Peabody. Like, it is doing something really unique that should be put on some kind of pedestal. Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen, Curse, what's his name? Nathan for you?
Nathan Fielder, yeah.
Nathan Fielder.
This is, like, if you like any of that stuff, you're late on this show.
Yeah.
This show is for you. Yeah.
Definitely. All right, so how to with John Wilson. I got a number four on my list. And before we get into the top three, because I think we're going to have a bit of overlap and some of the highlights of this year collected in our top three, I think we should dispense with the honorable mention. So, Art, why don't you kick us off? What are the shows that did not make your top list?
Some random ones. Kunk on Earth, I think you put on my radar.
Yes! So, so funny. Goofy.
I haven't been able to finish it because every time I play it, Alina hates her voice. She'll just stare at me. She's like, "Are you?
Oh no!
Are you playing that cunt girl?" And I was like, "We don't say that word in this house." Colin from Accounts is technically not of this year. Right. He barely got it. That was from the Intercuties, who had mentioned that last year, and I thought it was a pretty good pick. Young Love over on HBO Max was the Academy Award-winning short, Hair Love.
Yeah,
and now it's a cartoon series, and I think that's pretty good.
Matthew Cherry.
Yeah. Shout out, I'm a Virgo. That one was pretty good.
That's on my honorables as well.
I think you're going to have an honorable from Apple TV Plus that just got a second season. I'll give that to you. But you may not have Bupkis, which is really hard to recommend to people.
I got Bupkis.
Okay, bro. Have you ever recommended someone that show?
No.
And then you know what the opening of that show is with his mom? Very difficult. Very, very difficult. But what a fantastic Joe Pesci performance. That is great in The Irishman. But the people who wanted that old Joe Pesci, boy, you got what, 8 episodes here?
I think there's probably going to be a... And probably the best utilization of the, like, Pete Davidson hilarious but also kind of real thing that, like, it uses his charms in, like, the best way possible.
It took Staten Island and the other one that we like from Sundance, and I think it...
Big Time Adolescence.
Thank you. Ooh, and it made it even better.
Ooh.
To round it up, Single Drunk Female over on Hulu wrapped its season. They are very funny. I hope that they continue doing stuff. They actually worked on Good Burger, the team from... Good Burger too. So I guess that's another reason why I kind of liked it. Totally Completely Fine would be my definite hidden pick. Thomas and Mackenzie gets a house. That house has people committing suicide because it's right by the cliff. She doesn't realize this gift is a curse, and now she needs to stop those people. But it's also because she came from being a person who was doing a lot of self-harm. It was technically a cursed gift to help her from stop. Dude, hidden gem. Hidden gem. Watch
what
show it for sure.
What channel is it on?
AMC Plus. So, like, when I say hidden,
very
because
hidden.
It's Sundance now through AMC Plus. Zach had mentioned a couple of other ones, Full Circle. You said Gen V, How To. But this last one, I did not see enough for it. I saw a little bit more of The Curse to count it. Y'all, Fargo Season 5?
That'd probably be on my list if I had finished this season. But, yeah, it is incredible so far.
We went through the Globes and it had gotten the nominations. I was like, usually when we see that, we're like, this isn't out yet. That's not fair. Oh, Fargo? Yeah, for sure. No, easily. If they gave you all the screeners, easily. Juno Temple kills it in that show.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. All of Fargo is really good. I've been telling Zach, we've been waiting episode for episode. And Zach knows that when I'm waiting on a weekly basis and not waiting for it to all wrap, that means it's a good show. And we're so dumb. We go, it sucks that I have to wait for the next Fargo episode. As if I don't have 3 seasons of the anthology that I haven't seen yet just sitting there.
Exactly.
It's really good. But those are my honorables.
Nice.
Awesome. Amanda, what about you?
Not a ton. Last of Us, but we've already talked about it. A Small Light is another one. Yeah. I think that's kind of getting a second life because when I was watching it, it was on Disney Plus, and now it's on Netflix.
Now the awards?
So I think it's on Netflix now, right? At least here.
Oh, is it?
I think it's
Disney Plus for us.
What?
It's a TIFF pick. There's
All the Light in the World.
All the Light in the World and a Small
Light. Yeah, okay. I think that's what's throwing me off. Either way, it is getting a second life either way because of the award season. I thought that one was really good. I like Platonic, honestly. I know that wasn't the most popular. Okay.
Yes, I thought Platonic. Zach was going to mention it. Bro, it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. How y'all feeling on season 2?
I mean... We're going to run into Reservation Dog story where they're in different spots. So you can't.
Right. They'll find some excuse to put them back together and then we'll get more Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne antics. I mean, it's not a show where I'm so invested in the story of it that I'm going to feel betrayed when they put them back together, especially if they give us more scenes like Hidden Skills.
I swear I saw a UFO.
It's so, so good. And the militant, no, we have to unified front. We saw a UFO.
The painting bit is the only reason when she gets that new job, it messes up the painting that makes me think okay, it's not that bad if they're alone because she killed that whole, that whole episode.
Right.
Oh, they're really good. That's such a good show.
It is. Yeah. So I like that one a lot. And then probably Slip. The Zoe Lister Jones one. Whoa. That it literally kind of keeps leaving because I
good
saw
catch.
So long ago at this point. But it's really on Quibi? Good. Yeah. It's
so like, right?
You know, it's one of these like kind of short shows where, you know, every time Zoe Lister Jones comes, she enters a different multiverse. A different reality. You know, every time. And it's like really interesting. And it kind of like is just all her learning about herself and different options and ways she could have lived life and things like that. So yeah, it's good. That was a good one. So those are my stuff. Handful.
Absolutely. My honorable mentions, I'm going to start with a show that was the hardest for me to leave off my list. Sorry if it's on either of yours.
Loki.
I put Barry, number 11. I really love that show. I think it is
Art is betrayed.
Phenomenal
Art
filmmaking.
Is betrayed.
I don't even know you.
I don't know, man. I love Barry. I don't know. There's so many other shows that I wanted to talk about this year, and I just found myself putting it lower and lower, and I'm going to rewatch it and think I'm an idiot for not putting it on my list, but right now I got it 11. I don't know.
It's 14 for me. It was off my list. I had no problem bumping it. What's next? Succession.
A different show with an S. I maybe this one is going to show up on a list as well, but I put Scott Pilgrim Takes Off in my honorable mentions. Nice. Art, you also mentioned I'm a Virgo. And Bob Kiss I had. I have Party Down Season 3, which, you know, a lot of the flavor of the old show in a smaller package.
It's good.
Are you starting Season 1?
I got Season 1, and Season 1 is funny.
It's really good.
I'm not getting stars.
Yeah, well, I'll bring you DVDs.
Thank you.
I also got to do one more mention of Paul T. Goldman, the Peacock show from Jason Wolliner. I think, to me, it's the most fun I've had with the kind of, like, hybrid documentary thing going on with a lot of shows this year. It's just really creative, really funny, and surprisingly sweet as well. What else can we mention here? There's so much stuff. I mean, Last of Us, Abbott Elementary. I want to give a little bit of a love to Winning Time, even though the season was super sloppy. I still like that show.
Wow, I forgot to mention that here too. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean,
are none of us mentioning Invincible, or is that still coming?
It's still going. There's only four
episodes.
Yeah,
they did the split.
Yeah.
You can't even rate that.
Yeah, so it's not. I haven't even watched it yet. So I got the episodes that they sent, so I watched those three, but then there was another one, and I haven't watched that one yet. So
yeah.
It's good. So it's good so far, but it's just like not enough to even bother mentioning
here. We'll revisit when they release part two of season
so
two.
Much, yeah, part two is like, they don't even have a date for it, though. That's the problem. But Prime has a lot. Like, Maisel wrapped this year as well. The Horror of the Lotus Ranch was one that I mentioned prior. It's the A24 one where she makes human empanadas.
I remember,
pretty decent.
Justine Machado, right?
Jury Duty.
Jury Duty.
I'm telling you, it's a sleeper hit. It's
actually
really funny.
I'm surprised you
didn't
have that on your top 10.
I've seen it, yeah. Glad I didn't not mention it right now. I don't think it's top. I can't see it topping anything in my top 10.
No.
Yeah.
I did not expect to binge it. Like, James Marsden is really funny in this show.
Yeah, he's really good.
I think he's the reason why I didn't watch it at first, because I was like, there's no way that guy doesn't know. I know James Marsden isn't super popular, but there's no way that this man doesn't recognize him. But then somebody was like, no, they don't try to play it down as if he's not who he is. And I was like, oh, well, that makes more sense, because I didn't want to watch it because I didn't believe it would be possible that someone didn't know that this was a celebrity.
You need to do. There's a moment where they're doing the jury duty, and he's like reading a script for a fake movie that's coming up, and he doesn't want anyone to look at it. But he's like, "You guys aren't seeing my like performance." They have to pay a bill at one point, and it's way too expensive. And they're like, "You cover it. You're the celebrity."
That's so good. I love that. No, that's good.
It's really good.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
The premise is that everyone's an actor on this fake jury,
except for
the main
guy. This one guy. Yeah.
And he doesn't realize
it. But it was just more that, like, he's such a known actor that I was like, I can believe a bunch of other people, but, like, not James.
Him playing himself.
Marsden at least is playing himself. The rest aren't.
Good. That's all that
matters. And it's worth the nominations he's got.
Yeah.
Didn't they have to, like, filter someone out of the show because he did recognize someone a little bit too much and it was weird? Did that happen? Or did someone lie to me?
Maybe. I know. An interesting thing that they did on Prime was they had, like, bonus episodes. So it was, like, Yeah, it was like director's cut episodes. I haven't gotten a chance to see those yet. They were like adding minutes to like the episodes for different scenes or something. So very interesting premise.
Jury Duty was created by Lee Eisenberg and Gene Stupinski, and they cut their teeth doing The Office, which also, I think that was the first show I can even think about that did extended cuts and bonus features for streaming and stuff. So
it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they had that down pat, dude. Easily.
Definitely. Nice. All right. So those are our honorable mentions. Let's launch into the top three shows of the year. Arturo, where are we going to start?
Succession season 4.
Same. Ooh,
all the way down in 3? You too? Down in 3? Yeah. Wow.
Something, I don't know, something warmed up on me a little bit more. But yeah, Succession's great. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Top 3, Zach. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want?
Top 3.
We can talk about it more a little bit.
Okay.
I will go with The Curse for my number 3, which we can talk about it more
you
now.
You were the only one who wrapped it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it keeps it up is, I guess, what I'll leave it at, because I do not want to spoil. I don't know if I feel comfortable spoiling some of the things that happen, but it is such a hilarious creation of the like interesting elements of Nathan Fielder's writing with the sort of anxiety and tension of Benny Safdie's filmmaking. And of course, you got like an incredible Emma Stone performance at the center of this. It has this really particular, funny satire of this kind of like for-profit influencer kind of like do-gooder culture. These like white liberals who see themselves as positive change makers, but are ultimately mostly in it for capitalistic benefit or like personal
gratification.
Gratification or even just like to make themselves look portray themselves a certain way to the world. A lot of what the show is focused on is how we want to portray ourselves and how we do get portrayed, or also the ways in which media, whether that's social media or just like TV media, can warp your portrayal of something or warp how people see you. It's got just some of the most uncomfortable cringe comedy I've ever seen, but it's also just like incredibly thought-provoking and intensely layered and dense. For me, in fact, the thing that is the hardest thing to recommend about it is so dense with ideas that it feels hard to bite off a whole episode at once. Like it feels like they're trying to talk about a million things within the span
of
a normal episode's runtime. It makes it really good. It makes every scene matter, but it's not like the easiest to binge or anything like that. It's not like passive watching. You have to really be actively with
and
the
it's
show.
Hard. And it's hard.
Yeah. It's hard, particularly when it's so uncomfortable. Yeah. But I love that it exists, and I love so many of the things that they are addressing. Episode 5 in particular, which really hones in on Whitney, Emma Stone's character, to me is the peak of the show, because they're trying to sort of make the pilot episode of this philanthropy show, but also balancing egos at the same time. It's so, so good. I can't wait to talk with you both about it once you get the chance to watch the whole thing. Art, we're definitely, definitely doing a spoiler talk of the show once the finale's out there. But yeah, The Curse, I don't know if you said all that you want to say about it, but Art, at least, is there something that jumps out to you about The Curse?
That it's good? I know that a lot of people love
Nathan
Fielder. Nathan.
Yeah.
And they were like really impressed, almost scared with his acting. And I'm like,
He's always been like that.
Always been like that. So to see him in a narrative is what's got them going like, whoa, I didn't realize. I was like, no, this man is like, I feel like he's almost making fun of the producers, the money people, every single person that he's dealt with. I just saw that clip earlier. I hadn't seen it before. CNC, what's y'all's candidate think?
What?
CBC.
CBC?
Is that what it is? CBC?
Like CBC News?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's like talking to the guy from that network. Never seen that clip before. He embarrasses him through and through. Dude, the guy who runs it was like, please don't do this to me, Nathan. He's so funny in real life situations.
He started at CBC.
I know that.
Something like that. Yeah.
So his seeing CBC, everything that he's doing.
His CBC comedy segments are so funny. Just like trying unreal. To pressure people into saying.
Are Canadians just funnier?
But to make fun of the person who's paying you is crazy.
Yeah.
So now that he's doing a narrative, yeah, he's making fun of everybody he's been around, and he's at home. To take that then on the road and just mop Benny Safdie is so disrespectful every single time they're at a talk. And Benny is great in the show.
He's great.
He's insane in the show.
And so is Emma. But, Emma's having a great year. Emma's like shockingly perfect for that, but... would you guys live in one of those houses? I would not live in that house. That's like,
absolutely.
I
mean,
that's like a tomb.
They say that the temperature is supposed to freeze. I would be sweating constantly.
Yeah, and it's just there's no windows. Yeah. I feel like it's like a tomb. I would die.
It's ugly. It's don't ugly. Those are the type of houses that like kill birds because they don't know where they're going.
Yeah, absolutely, they would.
That happens in the show. Yeah. So, no, Emma's got like three. Her and her husband have three other movies that they're producing at Sundance. She's got this. On a roll. Yeah.
Crushing it this
year. I mean, it's such a credit to Emma that she would even sign up for a thing like this. She's a movie star. She doesn't really do TV much. She did that Maniac thing for Netflix. But aside from that, like, to be on a show that's even, like, on Showtime, it's not even, like, on a prestige network, it points to her interest in working on a project specifically like this with these people.
Don't be bogus, bro. Don't be bogus. You know Showtime is trying to be HBO.
Yeah, but they're not, though. Like, HBO had...
they're fighting.
I know they're Nathan not. Fielder,
like, we know we don't have Dexter anymore. But we're coming back.
Nathan Fielder has a first look deal with HBO. If HBO wanted this show, he would have had to have
they're
taken to him first.
They're kicking themselves in the ass. Yeah, they're kicking themselves in the ass.
I think it's a credit to Benny Safdie, who apparently is part of the reason that they wanted to expand it, because it was originally conceived to be half-hour episodes, and they thought, well, there's more here. Let's do full hours. And as you mentioned, huge credit to Nathan, who obviously we knew he's like a hugely gifted comedic persona. But like, I think about that one scene, it might have been in the first or second, maybe even third episode, where he and Emma are arguing after they're trying to record themselves for social media. And it just feels so real. Like there's not like a...
That's like episode five.
I think
that's like four
it's
or like,
I think it's three.
It's four.
You sure?
It's later. It's one of the last things I saw before I ended up. I don't think it was in the very last episode I watched, but it was one of the times where I was like, oh my God, this
is so
awkward.
It's a real clip that's out on Instagram, Zach.
Yeah. I mean, point being that like it just doesn't feel like there's any artifice there. It feels like a real argument, which is pretty stunning.
Scary?
Yeah.
Yep.
It, no, they
were. Do you know that people have had that argument all around the world, having it right now? In this very moment.
Yeah, but like the way he caught it between the both of them. And then the aftermath of trying to fake it just like exemplifies like, yo, you guys like really, there's no way you did two takes of that because more takes of that makes it feel more fake.
Yeah.
But then that's what it's commenting on when they try to.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant show.
Incredible show.
Yeah.
It's so good. Brilliant
another show. One of these shows that we could just spend like an hour diving into different aspects of it. We probably will.
Next year.
So that's my number three. Both of y'all had Succession. What is your number two, Arturo?
The other two.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Ever since we covered it. This is a series.
I'm so excited.
That has just aged perfectly. Yeah. I mean, I know there was like a big bomb that came out towards the end and with it wrapping up and everything and why it wrapped up. Hate is going to hate. Like, look, I'm not condoning anything that they did, reportedly, allegedly, but the other two, the moment Elemental came out, had such a peak episode about what they did with that. There are so many sequences within this. I can't even see Lucas Gage. I saw Don Lowe, but I can't see him the same way every time he appears somewhere after the episodes that he was in here for the Broadway play.
It's the best episode of the entire series. Carrie.
Wait till you catch it.
It's called Carrie and whatever her name is. Go see the In AIDS play. It is so funny and so smart.
You can't
so a continuation of Down Low. That was wrong of me.
Yeah.
He's great in it. That man has knocked it out of the park. Every guest show that they've had has knocked it out of the park. Just the jokes that they'll have at the bottom of just episodes. Zach really liked this one about when they're trying to raise funds for something. It comes so quick. It'll just be lines that they're making fun of. In the industry is just so smart. I think that's why it pissed off a lot of people, because it is going at a lot of not just influencer culture, but the people who work in a lot of these shows, moderators, hosts,
And they hate it.
The whole shebang, dude. They have knocked it out of the park. And I think every single season has gotten better. And I stand with this being the best season of TV. That's incredible to wrap it up like that. My number two. My number two of the year.
Yeah. Absolutely worthy of being remembered in that highlight. I mean, it's so funny in such a like incisive and particular way. Like it's commentary on, as you mentioned, like the entertainment industry or particularly gay culture. I think it's really good at showing you sides that are like unglamorous and uncommented on, the sides that don't get advertised to the world, right? And it's so just hilarious whenever it's doing it. So the other two.
And they're terrible people.
Yeah. And unreservedly, yeah. They don't really try to like soften them. They allow them to be like complete messes.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Did you see the clip from the first season where the brother made the gay music video was going around and people didn't realize that it was a joke?
Oh, no, I didn't
like,
see that.
People thought that was like a real song. People thought that this was like pandering. I'm like, you're all so fucking, you're so dumb.
Media literacy is dead.
It's dead.
It's genius,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah, it's like, when it's people bring up the so Tropic obvious. Thunder stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, oh, it was good. Anyway.
All right, the other two makes it all the way to two on Arturo's list. Amanda, what do you have at number two?
The Bear.
Oh, okay.
That is what bumped up over Succession for me. I don't know. It's got heart. It's got heart. The Bear's got heart.
I agree.
Succession, I feel like, I don't know if the ending of Succession, I need to rewatch it. I don't know if the ending of Succession is my perfect Succession ending.
Mm-hmm. But it's good, right?
But it's really good. It is really good, but I don't know if there's just, I either wanted another season or if there was more I wanted, but like, it is very good, but I don't know if it was like my perfect ideal ending. So that's why The Bear is now kind of getting bumped up, because I do think that like season two is like phenomenal television, just really good, heartfelt in so many different ways, so many strong performances. It's breezy to get through. So yeah, The Bear, easy top two.
I've got The Bear season two at my number two as well. It is swapped positions with the other show on my list from my mid-year point. I had The Bear at number one, and sitting them on them, I've decided, like, it was hard for me to make that choice in the first place. So I'm just going to make the opposite choice now.
I like that.
I don't know. Like, we could have a little bit of The Bear versus Succession talk if you want to, because these are clearly shows that all three of us really, really responded to. I think The Bear in particular, one of the reasons why you might want to lean towards The Bear is like, we've gotten so much great Succession. And I feel like The Bear, which was phenomenal in its first season, took a step up in the second season. I'm not even sure that they can continue at this level, because like, how do you do another Forks? How do you do another Fishes?
Yeah.
Those are like the best possible versions of those storylines, of those characters. Of
what did they do to the main character in the last episode? That is insane.
It all just has it feels so true to life, and it feels so thoughtful. The acting, the writing is so funny but real. There's just a million superlatives you could use for a show like The Bear. There's a reason that it's become this really organic hit. It's just kind of an undeniably beautiful piece of television. I can't think of, as much as I loved some of the other shows on this list, I kind of feel like you have to give the best episode of television award either to something from Succession that we can talk about, but it might be Fishes and it might be Forks. Those are just incredible, incredible episodes.
Forks is great. And how good are their beefs?
Oh yeah. I mean, the original beef, right? It's amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah. My only thing for Succession.
Yeah.
Because again, top three for sure is it being the ending to the series. Yeah. I understand it. I get it. As its own standalone, I guess, is what I'm judging of just season four. And that's the only reason, because I think of the ending, it's not bad, but I think of the ending to one, two, and three. Why is this coming in fourth place? Yeah. It's a really good ending for the finale of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, as a standalone thing, I'm putting the other three way higher.
Same.
Whereas The Bear, I think, as two, even though it's clearly building up to something else, it was such a complete season. I mean, you're mentioning so many great episodes. I think we're at my number one. It's FX's The Bear. Season two had such a great episode that didn't even deal with tension. It wasn't Forks. It wasn't The Seven Fishes. It wasn't even the ending. You got the homie Marcus going over to Sweden?
When he's making the beautiful, the rainbow art.
The desserts.
the desserts, and it was just, it's like, that's what I mean, it's stuff like that's that. It's like, yeah. This has been a really good year for like contemplative, beautiful simplicity.
Yeah.
And I think
feeding cats that aren't there.
Feeding cats that aren't there. Cleaning toilets.
Getting a great Will Poulter performance where he's as chill as he's ever been.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
That's a good breakdown of it. Yeah. Because he goes there expecting that it's going to be like a completely, what Carmi got.
Yeah, what Carmi got.
Right? With, what's his name from the soup?
Yeah. But it's just beautiful.
It's such a flip.
Patient.
Right? Like, don't be afraid to ask questions. That's how you learn.
Yeah. And just like dedicated to the craft. Like, we're taking this seriously, but I'm not going to scream at you for it.
He's learning.
Because you're learning.
Zach knows. And I love seeing people learn on screen.
Yeah. Like the screaming can come later. Dude. Right now, it's for learning. So good.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis. So good in this. I forgave her for her Oscar.
No, I mean, like, this is a show in which they had like a phenomenal Sarah Paulson appearance and nobody talks about it because she's the fifth best actor in that episode.
John Mulaney.
Crazy.
Absolutely.
We have a list of restaurants we got to hit off of, what was it, episode two?
Just everywhere Cindy went, right?
It's great stuff, man. That is FX is the Bear, my number one.
Art's number one. That's Amanda's number two. You had it ahead of Succession. I had it in number two. I have it behind Succession. I'm going to jump up and say my number one of the year is Succession season four. I wanted to flip it back up just because it's so good. Like, it's the... I think it is the best written show, perhaps of all time. The scripts are just they're incredibly verbose. The not just the intelligence that they bring in of like incorporating real world events and having it feel both like of our reality, but in its a distinct own version of it too. The characters are so finely tuned that you kind of know what they're gonna say even before they finished saying it. You just feel like you're in this world with these people. We could talk about the best quotes, but it would just be far too long of a list.
Yeah.
And the only episode of TV that I think really contends with those amazing Bear episodes is Connor's Wedding. It's just like one of the most stunning pieces of television I've ever seen to kill off your iconic character about 15 minutes into the third episode of your fourth season. It's just
off screen.
And it's capturing a feeling that I don't know if I've ever seen articulated on TV. You know, Art and I were doing breakdowns after each episode, and I just don't know if there's any other show on TV right now that can support talking about every episode for an hour plus the way that Succession did, and not just for us but for lots of other people. It's an incredibly rich text, and I hear you on the argument that it's not its own best season of television, so how could it be the best on this list? But it's just one of the great shows of all time.
I think you can take it as that.
Yeah. And I hear Amanda also saying that like maybe the finale isn't like its best or it's perfect, but I think it's like satisfying in a way that these huge shows rarely end up being that satisfying. Like, it's
true.
You're not gonna
better than Sopranos,
exactly, right? Like, it's such a hard thing to land the plane on these shows, and we've seen some absolutely disastrous final seasons.
Yes.
And that this one wasn't, that this one like kind of kept the quality up. It's just a remarkable feat.
I agree. Yeah.
Want you to compare both series. I don't want you to. But in terms of an ending, you don't think Breaking Bad still has that as the capstone of like, that's how you do it?
You know, I think it's interesting enough that you mentioned Breaking Bad, because I kind of think it's doing the Breaking Bad finale. Because Breaking Bad had its penultimate episode left Walt kind of, you know, isolated and alone and sad.
And then a prologue.
And then he kind of has his triumphant return. And Succession almost flips that, in that you get the triumphant moment of the siblings coming together and meal fit for a king. And this is going to be our big happy ending. And then it brings you back down to earth and it shows you the consequences of their actions. And it gives you the kind of rug pull moment. So I think that there's a lot of similarities there. Maybe Breaking Bad inches it out. Better Call Saul might even inch out Breaking Bad.
I know.
But
I know.
One of the all-time great finales, I think.
It is gonna age well. That's the thing about it. It's one of those where it's just like, just because we wanted it to hit a little bit better now, that doesn't mean that on the rewatch, which will definitely happen.
Yeah.
You got four seasons to go back to, and that it's all still going to hold up, which is the best thing you could say about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Also just incredible that like after years of Jeremy Strong is so amazing. Brian Cox is so amazing. They just like sneak made Kieran Culkin the most interesting person on this show. But that's
I love Keith. Killed Keith. It. Yeah, I've been on his train, so
it's stoked. It's the power of the writing.
He was definitely the best part of the last one. And also, hey, don't forget the boy. What's his name? Skarsgård.
Yeah,
absolutely demolished.
He's so good. Yeah. I love him. I love him so much.
Amanda, I don't know if we skipped over your Succession time. If there's anything else you want to add to it, because you did have it at number three on your list too.
No, I think I said everything. Why I kind of bumped it down a little bit, but no, it is still like a masterclass in television and just everything you want when you're approaching a television show and not overstaying your welcome. And yeah, no, it's very good.
All right, so number three on Art's list, number three on Amanda's list, number one on mine is Succession. We've already covered The Bear. Number two on mine, number two on Amanda's, number one on Arturo's. So we're just left with Amanda's choice for the best show of 2023.
I still think Poker Face takes it for me. I was so charmed by this show. I love her. Mm-hmm. She's in like some Old Navy commercials right now. Like anytime I visit my parents, she's in Old Navy commercials. And I'm like, I was in a hotel and I was like, that's my girl. I like her. Yeah. She's great. I think I'm glad that people are finally seeing her as like a lead again. I don't know everybody. It's so easy to just kind of like stick her as like the, I know she's got, but I'm a cheerleader, but you know, she went through American Pie and she was kind of like the best friend and that's where most people know her from. But she is such a dominant force on screen. She's so quirky. She's so interesting. She's got this like she's so cool. It's just that she's cool. She's like, she's kind of up there with like Emma Stone, but like the more like, she's like the Emma Stone that drinks more beer and smokes more, maybe, but like is like so cool. Yeah, exactly. But she's so cool. And I just love her and I love this show. And I think I can't imagine a better person for that role. I can't imagine anybody else being in that role. It's so Natasha Lyonne, by the way, because we haven't actually said it. And I like the way, and I normally don't like anthologies and I don't usually like stories that just kind of pick up, do a story, abandon it and keep going. But this is like the best possible way to do that, to be dropping in on these different people, their different stories, how she applies to it, the way that her presence just completely affects and changes everywhere she goes. It's so interesting. And like, as much as she tries to stay out of things, she just like can't. She just gets that nagging feeling when people say things. It finds her. And then she's like, a good person, even if she wouldn't necessarily consider herself that, like she has to get to that answer. So I think this could have been a really good like one and done type show, but I am interested to see how they expand it out. I thought it was all just so very interesting and fun, and I'm just so excited to see where it goes.
This is for sure one of the, like, I feel like miracles of the streaming age, because it's kind of, I think it only could have existed at this time, right? Where we have this beautiful production that's led by like a really charismatic star. You have Rian Johnson coming in and lending his directorial vision, writing some of the episodes. And then you have these like superstar talents that are just come through the show like a revolving door, whether that's like you get Hong Chow, you get Judith Light, you get
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah. And it's
Charles Melton.
Yeah.
And it's such good stuff. And it you know, you mentioned that it kind of feels fresh every week, but they also have like just enough of a through line that it still merits watching it in order and seeing the way things build and progress. Mm-hmm. I know I just talked about The Bear and Succession having some of the best TV episodes of the year, but this is another contender for just singular episodes that are incredible. Yeah, I mean,
which top?
I don't even know anymore.
Let me look at the list.
I got Nursing Home. It's been Nursing Home for me for a minute.
Nursing Home is very good.
I like Exit Stage Left, the one with Tim Meadows Ellen Barkin?
Yeah, Stage Death. Exit Stage Death. It's there like the ultra dramatic. Yeah. Man, I love so much of them. I don't even know which one I'd pick.
1-8.
A lot of people say Escape from Ship Mountain.
I was going to say that one kind of like that one? The Joseph Gordon-Levitt one where she ends up like buried under the snow for a bit.
Okay.
I think that one's really good. I do love the nursing home one because of how many different twists and turns that ends up taking. Because mm-hmm. you're just kind of like, what are these written. Women? So well written.
Also,
so
one
well
of the best
written.
Performances from her when she gets the realization. Yeah. I'm like, yo. Like, oh, that tear. Yeah. That was really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Oh, it's so good. I love it.
Yeah, poker face.
Zach, did you have this on your top 10?
I did. I had it at number 5. I had it higher than you. You had it at number 8.
You did have it higher than
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
It's the only one I mentioned it, and I apologize. That's how I presented it.
You did, and I don't know if it's enough for me. Either way, great show, yeah. great show.
Hey, made it on all of our lists.
Look, yeah. We're going to talk about how strong of a movie year 2023 was, but it was also a really strong TV year, even if the back mm-hmm. half of it maybe felt a little bit lighter. The first half brought some amazing stuff, and there were even some great shows that have popped up in the months since then, so... A lot to really enjoy. Art, why don't you take us through from 10 to 1 what you actually put on your top 10 list?
For sure. At number 10, I had Dead Ringers over on Amazon Prime. That's got a really good double performance from Rachel Weisz. On Apple TV Plus, Monarch Legacy of Monsters has that whole budget that you need. It is full CG VFX stuff, and it is doing the best thing in the Monsterverse than everybody else. Poker Face of Peacock, I apologize again. It is fantastic. It is great. I hate doing lists. It lives on forever. Poker Face is great. Beef over on Netflix. It doesn't need to be an anthology because it gave us all the emotions we needed. The Curse is incredible. It's cringy. It's everything you need it to be. Swarm, I agree that it is the American Psycho of this generation, in my opinion. The Last of Us on HBO, I think, is still... It's a Cliff Notes, but it's still a great Cliff Notes of the game. Succession Season 4 is going to age very well. The other two, Season 3, has aged very well. And then at the top, FX is the Bear, Season 2.
Great list, Amanda. What is your top 10?
All right, starting with my number 10, we have The Curse, then Netflix's Heartstopper, then Gen V, The Boys spinoff, then I Think You Should Leave, the Netflix sketch show, followed up by Fall of House of Usher, the other, you know, the last Netflix Mike Flanagan show, then Reservation Dogs, then Beef, then Succession, then The Bear, and finally Poker Face in my number one spot.
There we go. And for my top 10, I started out with Shrinking over on Apple TV Plus at number 10. Only Murders in the Building, Season 3 on Hulu at number 9. Number 8, Righteous Gemstones from HBO. Number 7, The Other Two, also from HBO, more Max. Number 6, another Max show, Full Circle. In my top 5, I had Poker Face from Peacock. Number 4, How To with John Wilson on HBO. Number 3, The Curse over on Showtime. Number 2, The Bear on Hulu, and number 1, Succession, the HBO champion. Really good list. Really good year of TV. Any final thoughts before we move on to other lists that we have to get through?
I think festivals are going to be really interesting. We know that Tribeca, we kind of mentioned this in the Midway list, has changed their name to not be the Tribeca Film Festival, but the Tribeca Festival. Fest. Sundance has a lot of pilots. There is going to be a big push for TV more than ever before, and I think we're going to feel it in the movie festivals.
A couple of these shows that we talked about had their premiere at South By last year.
Yeah.
Ah, you're right, yeah. That is very true.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially because now we are post-work stoppage, and there's going to be new incentives, financial incentives behind some shows. So maybe TV will reshape.
The Curse was at New York, no?
The Curse was at the New York Film Festival. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. At the New York Film Festival. Yeah, yeah. Like it's
changing age.
It's changing.
Yeah. And we'll cover whatever it is. Although, you know, we've talked in the past about peak TV and how hard it is to keep up with how many shows there are now. But we seem like we're finally at an era of consolidation and maybe TV will be a little bit more manageable. I still feel like there'll be things that slip through our fingertips. But
that's too much.
That's about it for our recap of the best TV from 2023. You can catch more from me, Zach Shevich, on various social medias at Zshevich, S-H-E-V as in Virgo, I-C-H, and check out my YouTube channel, Multiplex Show. Amanda, where can people find more from you?
You can find me all over the place, but primarily YouTube at Amanda the Jedi.
There we go. Arturo, where can people find more from you?
You could find me over at LME Movies on all social medias, on YouTube at Let Me Explain, or here on Intercut, where we got 12 more hours to go.
Yeah, you can listen to every episode of the Intercut podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, whatever your favorite podcatcher is. I use Overcast. And then make sure you're subscribed not just to the audio podcast, but to the video feed as well on youtube.com/intercutpod, where you can watch our anticipatory faces as we get ready for more of this running through entertainment, TV, movies. Find new episodes of Intercut every Monday. Please leave us a comment, like the videos, and consider hanging over to iTunes to give us that much requested 5-star review. Shout out to our listeners in France for putting us on the film review podcast charts out there. Like our Facebook, our Instagram, our Twitter, our TikTok. Support our Patreon. You can find all of them at Intercut Pod, as well as our Discord, which you can find a link to in the description of this episode, to get updates throughout the week from Art, from me, from Amanda, from all the guests that we feature here on Intercut. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, I love you, but you're not serious people.